In 1519, Hernan Cortes made a decision that would echo through history. Upon landing on the shores of the New World, he faced impossible odds. Outnumbered and surrounded by uncertainty, he gave an audacious order: burn the ships. With no way to retreat, his men had one choice: fight to succeed or die trying. And they did succeed. Cortes' story isn't just about conquest, it's about commitment. It's about making bold decisions, eliminating excuses, and going all in on your vision. Welcome to Burning the Ships, the podcast where we explore what it means to take risks, push boundaries, and refuse to look back. I'm Jason Seward, your host. In each episode, we'll share stories, strategies, and insights to help you tackle your challenges head on, overcome obstacles, and make your own history. This is Burning the Ships. Let's get started. Welcome to Burning the Ships Weekly Ramble. And today I am going to talk about another book that has been, I alluded to it on last week's Ramble. And it is one that has, I would say above all the other ones I've talked about, probably has had the most impact in my overall life as far as leadership when it comes to just leading a team or leading my own life, my family, but just being and just leading my life, right? Living my life. And the book is Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink. And I not going to dive so much into like chapter by chapter, section by section, like summary of the book. I'm just going to talk about the mindset of extreme ownership. Before I get into that, I'm going to do JJ's joke of the week. And here's JJ's joke of the week. Why did the banana go to the doctor? Because it wasn't peeling well. JJ's joke of the week. All right. I'm excited to get him in here when he gets out of school and start being the one telling the jokes, because I think they'll be much better, I guess, presented that way. But again, back to extreme ownership. I'll preface everything with this one's going to be a pretty quick one. I recorded or attempted to record a weekly ramble earlier this week. Went in this morning looking at like scheduled episodes and stuff coming up. And for whatever reason, I don't know if I did something incorrect or it uploaded wrong, but it is not in our library. So I spoke for about 30 minutes on another topic that I'm going to revisit when I have more time. I'm limited on time today, so I'm going to do a shorter one on extreme ownership, but we'll circle back to that. So the book, Jocko's book, the main theme is literally taking ownership of everything in your life. And he's not talking about material. He's talking about ownership of what happens to you, good, bad, and different, all those things. And by ownership, what he's referring to is you have full, both mentally and, you know, every other way possible, but you own every situation. You basically have agency over everything in your life. Even sometimes the things that are literally outside of your control, you have ownership of your response and perception and your reactions to all those things. And, you know, unfortunately, I think we live in a culture where that is something that a lot of people lack. And I, you know, it could be for many reasons. They weren't taught to, you know, have this mindset. They were raised in an environment or cultivated in an environment of, you know, people complaining, making excuses, pointing fingers, things like that. But for whatever reason, more people than not that I have encountered in my experience in my life, don't take full ownership of everything in their life. And are very quick to, you know, anything negative that's going on in their life, they deflect ownership of that. They point fingers and they'll give you a million reasons why things, you know, are the way they are in a negative way. And those reasons typically have nothing to do with anything they had an influence on. And that, you know, there's a lot of downstream negative impacts of folks being that way. Number one, individual to that person, and I'll use myself for an example. If I chose to handle most things that happen negative to me with my first reaction being, oh, let me figure out whose fault this is. You know, let me figure out a way to place blame. And, you know, that's just wasted time and effort trying to figure those things out. Extreme ownership is when those bad things happen, you, and I say this all the time, is how I try my best to live my life through any adversity is what has happened. I can't change what's done, right? The past is there. It's gone. I can't go back in time and, you know, fix anything there. Only thing I have control over, and I can't change, you know, what circumstances happen to get to a bad outcome or a negative place or whatever it is. But the only thing I control is literally this second forward and how I'm going to either influence the situation, whatever the situation is, how I'm going to correct it, how I'm going to be resourceful and, you know, collaborate with others if needed. But none of that time and focus is going to be on why did we get here. Now, there is a time and place to kind of do like an after action report and really dive into like, okay, let's look at some potential mistakes that were made along the way and let's see what we can do to correct those moving forward. And that's being proactive. So you're not blaming anybody there. You're just dissecting it and saying, okay, some mistakes were made, obviously, to get us into this adverse situation. What were they? So I'm looking in the past, I'm dissecting that, and how can we correct those moving forward? So that's what I have control over. That's ownership. You know, some real life examples of this, and I shared this on a podcast, I don't know, it's been several months ago, but like a real estate deal, one of my very first flips. Oh, actually, I was a guest on somebody else's podcast, and I talked about this deal, but it was my very first fix and flip property, the first house I bought to fix up to sell it, right? I bought a bunch of rentals up to this point, but this one was fully intended to flip. Went through the process, all the numbers made sense, I bought it, all my rehab, I hit all my budget numbers, everything was perfect until it went to sell and the buyer got an inspection done, which is standard, and discovered a bunch of crawl space issues that, it's a long story, not going to get into it, I can point a lot of fingers, but at the end of the day, we got to that place on that deal because of things that I neglected, things that I overlooked, things that I got, I tried to get in a hurry on or to go quick with when I shouldn't have. And again, that's a whole nother podcast in itself, but the net is I was set to gain about $50,000 in profit on that flip. And because of this big mistake I made, it wiped out all of that profit. And I think I ended up losing, you know, I ended up basically breaking even. I think I lost a couple $100s once it all netted out on that deal. So while I didn't necessarily lose $50,000, I lost, you know, I was projecting to make $50,000 and all that went away in one inspection. So the reason I bring up that example, and I'm not going to get into all the details again for the sake of time, but that was an example where I had a choice to make. I got the results of that inspection report. I got the news that the buyer was backing out, breaking the contract. We're not breaking it, but boarding it because of the inspection issues. And I knew I had a problem on my hand. Now, what could I have done? And I think a lot of people, their default is, how the hell did this happen? What happened? Let me figure it out. Who can I go scream at? Who can I go yell at? Who caused me to get in this situation? You know, blah, blah, blah. All that is well and good. And I maybe spent 5 minutes in that mindset. And then I realized, like, it's not going to be fixed, right? I mean, you know, in some cases, there's legal actions that can take place that you can probably spend some time and energy on to help you, you know, rectify or mitigate the mistake that was already made if it was indeed somebody else that led to it. But wasn't the case here. Like, I had some fingers I could point to, but I didn't oversee those things or some people I could point fingers to contractors and things like that. But I overlooked a lot of things and didn't watch it and manage the project as closely as I should have. That 100% fell on me, and I accepted that within less than 10 minutes of finding out this news on this deal. So what did I do? I did not at all think about it anymore. I went straight into, okay, this sucks. Let's figure it out. Get on the phone with my contractor. We come up with a plan. Takes a few months to rectify all the issues or, you know, fix them. And back on the market, it sold. Everything worked out. Now, there's two different outcomes that could have happened there. All right. One, and I'm going to stick to this example for a minute. One, I could have gone into the mode of, how did this happen? And I eventually did that. Like, I reflected on the moves I made and the lack of good choices I made or decisions I made during that process, so that I could bank that, store it in my memory, and bank it with experience and not make those same mistakes moving forward. But I also could have looked at it like, all right, the original inspector should have caught this. I got a clean, you know, bill of health on the house and the crawl space, minus this one little section that he could not access, and I told him not to worry about it, right? So, like, being a finger pointer in that situation, I can say he should have caught that. You know, he should have gotten under there. Well, realistically, I told him not to worry about it. So a lot of people would stop there and blame him, right? He's the inspector. I hired him to be the expert. He should have known that. He should have advised me to go under there and then create conflict with him. Like, I had no, it was in an email that he sent, like, no, it was a text message. Do you want me to go in there? And I told him, no, don't worry about it. We're good. If the rest of it looks good, let's roll. And so I had no legal leg to stand on, and nor would I have wanted to, because I made that decision, right? I was the one that did it, and that was my mistake. And then there were some other issues along the way that I didn't do good enough due diligence on this property and a couple variables that were involved with it, and it ended up costing me money. And again, I could point fingers. There are legitimate, you know, cases to be made where I could, I had a contractor during the middle of it, literally just abandon the job. I couldn't find him. I didn't hear anything from him for like 2 weeks. I'm trying to hunt this guy down. And never had any more communication with him. He just ghosted me. I still to this day don't know where he's at. And so that caused delays. I had to get somebody else in there. Thankfully, they fixed a few of his problems and, you know, so forth. But I didn't spend any time sulking in the fact that this contractor abandoned me. I should have done a better job vetting this contractor out. Had I done that, I probably, since then, I've talked to several people that have used him in the past and had a similar experience. So all I had to do was make some phone calls, do some vetting and check references, and that's on me, extreme ownership. So I accepted that for what it was and moved on. As far as, like, from a leadership standpoint, so when I read this book, I was a manager, an agency manager with my previous company, and I had a big team under me of sales reps, sales agents, and admin staff. And one thing that when I read this book, I was, you know, hot and heavy in that career and just trying to be a better leader, looking for every resource I could to do that. And this book really gave me a new perspective on how to lead a team, how to lead people, and how to be the one, like the rock that everybody is looking up to make the hard decisions, to be creative and come up with different, you know, strategies and things like that, depending on what we're working on. But the extreme ownership piece of it is, I took on the mindset of, at the end of the day, my name is on this agency, the Jason Seward Insurance Agency, under the Farm Bureau umbrella. And I took literal agency over that. I took pride in the fact that everything that happened, whether it was with a client whether it was a bad claim, whether it was hiring a new employee, having to deal with difficult HR situations with employees, stuff like that. It all was under my name, the Seward Agency. And that mindset did a couple things. Number one, I never blamed anybody under me about it, even if they made a terrible mistake. I had situations where, you know, I can't share details, but I had a couple with employees of mine that I was responsible for that made some very, very poor mistakes, I would say, poor choices that in some cases led to termination and impacted our overall agency and company and everything. Well, they made the mistake. They're the ones that made the choice, but I'm responsible for what they do under my agency, right? So when I didn't spend in those situations, this is where that mindset really helped me as a leader. I didn't spend any time focusing on, you know, what they did other than trying to figure it out and figure out what the next, you know, response is. All my time was spent on, let's learn from it. What did I do wrong? What did I do as a leader to allow them to put them in a situation where they thought it was okay to make the choice they did? Did I not train them? Did I not mentor them well enough? Did I not equip them with all the resources they needed to feel confident not to be unethical or whatever the case might have been? And so I always brought it back to myself. And what that did for the rest of my team is they saw this. They saw how I operated and how I handled adversity and stuff like that. And I always wore it on my shoulders. And that boosted morale on my team because they knew that as long as they're operating ethically and within the boundaries of, you know, what they can operate and do their job within, that they knew if they made mistakes, they were free to do that because I wasn't gonna criticize them. I would coach them, and I'm talking about ethical mistakes. You know, if they just made an honest error and it led to an issue, they could work more freely knowing that they could go out and do their job creatively and do all the things they need to do without the stress of having a leader that's going to try to pin everything on them, right? I never did that, never will, never have. And this book helped me with that because at the end of the day, if an employee of mine or somebody I'm responsible for their employment goes out and does anything, you name it, whether it's unethical, whether it's ethical, but a mistake, whether it's whatever the case may be, I take responsibility for it. I'm going to have hard conversations with them, but for the outsiders looking in, they will never hear me say anything but I screwed up. I did a poor job managing this. And that's why as a leader in my previous company, I did, you know, I'll say this humbly, but I had a lot of respect from the executives in the company because that's how I operated. I never, you know, even when I was given an open door to easily walk through and pass blame on situations, I never took it. I always, always owned everything that was under my name. And unfortunately, I worked with a lot of folks that didn't do that. It was always, they were finding some type of an excuse as to why they, and here's where it's hard. In a sales organization, I'm kind of going all over the place and I need to start wrapping this up shortly, but I'm going to make this last few points. In a sales organization, most things are month to month. Like, what have you done for me lately? And stuff like that. It's easy to have extreme ownership when you're hitting your numbers and goals and incentives and stuff like that. It is not easy when things are in the tank and from a number standpoint. So it is people's true colors as far as ownership come when they are not performing well or their team is not performing well. The individuals that during bad times, during poor performance times or just lulls in production or whatever they're responsible for, the individuals that respond to that with giving you a basket full of excuses as to why things are like that, that individual is not a leader. They are not a leader. They're not practicing ownership. They're trying to deflect and get attention off of them as being the reason that it's that way. I had plenty of lulls in my career. Fortunately, majority of the time was good. My team and myself, we performed very well. But there were plenty of lulls, months, quarters, and even years that we did not perform very well. I never, when I would sit down with my leaders and, you know, the executive team, and I'd have to answer for certain things that we were not performing well in, it was never, oh, this person did this and that's why this is this. This person or this circumstance, our rates were terrible, blah, blah, blah. I never said those words. Those things, they know, they see it, right? I always said, I've got to do a better job here. I have to do a better job here. I see an opportunity where we can improve here. I'm focused on that. These are my priorities to make sure I'm not here next year. And that's how I approached everything. Extreme ownership. It all falls on me. I also do that, and in this book really gets into like practicing this in business and life. But in life, it's the way I choose, and really the folks I tend to surround myself with choose to operate, and that is, we got full control of everything, right? Nothing that happens to us can take ownership of us, right? Can take over or impact what's truly going on with me, in my brain, in my heart. And what I mean by that, you know, there's a lot of things you can't control in life, right? Things happen that literally you have no control over. Some of it's very sad. Some of it is exciting. But a lot of it you have no control over. The ownership piece is realizing that, recognizing that, and then immediately when those things happen, you take control. That's when you have control. When things happen, or planning for, you know, things that might happen, and having a plan B and C and D in place for things that could happen. You can control all that, but what actually happens if I'm looking out the window right now, my truck is sitting there parked on the street. If somebody right now, and watch it happen, but somebody slams into my truck right now while I was parked on the street. Did I have any control over that? No. I mean, yeah, I could have parked in the grass and not been on the street, but I chose to park on the street. I have no control over that. So in that moment, I have two choices. I can get up and go get pissed off at the person that just hit my truck, you know, fired up and just mad at the world and let it ruin my day. Or I can say, well, that sucks. Now let's fix it. Let's go out there. Let me get the insurance information. Oh, he hit and run. They're gone. I don't know who did it. That sucks too. Let me file a claim with my insurance. Let me take care of it. And I'm going to get right back to what I was doing, right? If I have to have it towed, let me coordinate all that. It's unfortunate. It's unlucky. But I'm going to take ownership of it. And I'm going to take ownership of my reaction to it. And that's the biggest thing. So this is a topic, I may come back to it in the future because I'll dial in. I really want to dive into a couple things specific in the book. For the sake of time, unfortunately, I have to wrap this one up. But I encourage you all listening to do a couple things. One, go pick up this book and read it. It's a great book, Extreme Ownership, Jocko Willink. And he's got a podcast. He's got a bunch of stuff out there, resources that are free. The book you got to buy. But so check him out. He's got a great mindset, and he's a great like leadership discipline, things like that. He's a great coach on that. So that's one. And then number two, take some inventory on your own life and what's going on in your life right now. Are you struggling? Are your kids giving you a hard time? Are you struggling with how to parent them? And are you blaming things, you know, the school? Are you blaming the teachers and the administrators at the school that are having more, or are you saying they have an impact on your kids? Are you blaming their coaches? Are you blaming things that are outside of what you have control on as a part of the reason your kids are struggling right now, and whatever it is? That I'm probably speaking to a lot of people that are dealing with that right now. Well, assess that and stop worrying so much about that impact unless it's something you can directly affect, and look at what you can control in that situation. Can you move them to a different school? Can you homeschool? Can you teach them through the adversity they might be dealing with what you seem to, or what you consider a bad coach, teach them that in life you're going to have some managers, some leaders, some bosses, some coaches that you don't align with. You still got to fight through and be on the team and see it through the end, right? Ask yourself about your job and your career and your business. You know, are there areas in that you tend to default to blaming others rather than looking at how you can impact it and control it? So those are some things I'll challenge you with on this. Again, extreme ownership, it is a mindset in all phases of life, personally, professionally, with your relationships, with your businesses, your careers, your kids, your spouses, your boyfriends, your girlfriends, whoever you got in your life. Extreme ownership typically, and in my opinion, always wins in the end. So give it some thought, give that book a read, and that'll wrap up this week's Burning the Ships Weekly Ramble, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Burning the Ships. I want to give a special thanks to our sponsor, 608B Capital, helping real estate investors secure fast, reliable funding to fuel their boldest moves. If you're ready to take your investing to the next level, visit 608bcapital.com to learn more. If you found value in today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but it also helps us reach more people who are ready to burn the ships and commit fully to their goals. And don't forget to share the episode with someone who needs that extra push to take bold action. I'll leave you with this. Burning the ships isn't just about removing the option to retreat. It's about unlocking the courage to charge forward. No matter the odds, the past is behind you and the future is yours to conquer. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time on Burning the Ships.